Welcome back to the Unanimous Decision Podcast. I'm your host, D-Palm. Follow me on Twitter at D-Palm66. Follow the show on Twitter at UDPod. Follow the entire MGR Network at, you guessed it, the MGR Network. You found us, don't lose us. Subscribe in the iTunes store. Subscribe everywhere podcasts are given away for absolutely free, including, that's right, Spotify. Leave those five-star reviews. You leave 5 stars on iTunes, I will read it on the air. I'll make fun of my own team and myself for those 5 stars because I'm kind of a whore like that. But if you don't want to have me say anything funny, you can just leave a 5-star review. It just lets us know that more people are listening than the approximate, I guess, my immediate family and my wife who I make listen. So we're here. You guys are checking in with UDPod. It's episode 137. I've been here doing this for a while, but I do want to remind everyone of the rest of the MTR offerings. We always got our premium stuff. The paywall is going to be full of content this month. I should know, I'm recording a lot of it over the next 2 days. We've also got our season finales of The Flash and Arrow reviews are up. The Legend of Tomorrow will be up next week. And of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back. So your Super Tuesday feed will be full of content all summer long. I'm not getting the break I wanted, but maybe it's the break I needed. We're here. We're back. We're going to talk about the NBA playoffs. We're going to talk about some NFL stuff. But first, I want to welcome on our guest this week, one of my oldest friends from college. I normally am kind of worried about having people from college on because they could tell stories about me that are hurtful. But he was there for most of them, and I'm not sure the statute of limitations up on all of them. So, Jake, man, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me. And I would just say the way more embarrassing stories happened after college. So I don't know what you're worried about. But
wow.
Thanks for whenever the UD, you know, final series finale podcast happens, you're going to have to tell that story. But anyway, thanks for having me. Great to be here. And my condolences on the declining, if not rock bottom standards of your guest invitations by having me on.
The best part about having you on is how mad it's going to make Ward.
Oh, can't wait. Can't wait. What's up? What's up, Ward? What's up, dude?
All right, man. So, so it's so funny. Everyone's like, oh, you guys, everyone, your friends was in college, you played ball. I'm like, well, not everyone. Jake was our friend who he wrote for the Columbia Spectator. He wrote sports for it, so he wrote about his friends, I guess, a little bit. My favorite Jake story is we got trapped in Atlanta on our way back from spring break 1 year, and my parents took us all in, and it was all these football guys and Jake. And my mom thought Jake was the most adorable human being alive because he just looked so out of place with us.
It's the second most out of place I've ever been in Atlanta. First was obviously the time I went to Freaknik, but that was a great weekend. That was my introduction to showering with deer off in the Palmer family basement shower.
That is 1,000% true. But no, I really appreciate you coming on. I'm always enjoy having my actual real life friends on, even though it doesn't make me nervous to combine my real life and my digital life that I've built here that could be torn asunder at any given moment. All right, so we're going to start in the sport we don't usually cover on UDPod, and that's boxing. And, you know, a lot of people talk about boxing as sweet science, and, oh, it's just been kind of phased out of reality. Well, Deontay Wilder's determined to bring it back. He was asked by USCA Sports about his bad blood with his upcoming opponent, whose name I can't pronounce, so I'm not going to try. The fight is Saturday night at Barclays in New York. And I'll tell you what, guys, he might have sold me a fight. This is the quote he gave to USA Today. If he dies, he dies. This is boxing. This is not a gentleman's sport. This is a gladiator sport. And with bad blood, we know I possess the power. This fight with the bad blood that we got going, I don't see this fight going long. I'd be surprised if this fight goes past 3 rounds. I don't like this guy. I don't have no good intentions. I wish the worst on him. He then, in a later interview during a scrum, said, this is the only sport where killing a man is legal. Why wouldn't I take full advantage of my rights in that ring? Jake, this is obviously a good bout of sports, of trying to, you know, plug a fight because he's quoting fucking Rocky IV. But is any of it wrong? Like, it's not tasteful, obviously, but is he in a sport where the goal is to hit the person in the head as hard as possible? He's not far off base.
Yeah, look, the amazing thing is, like, he starts with a Rocky IV quote, and then it gets better. The bad blood thing is particularly poetic. Yeah, look, nice try trying to get the interest up in the fight, but can't say you're going to be bringing boxing back into the mainstream by talking about killing people. That is probably the way to just continue pushing this down the niche you know, ESPN to 12:30 on a Tuesday morning type of time slot. I had not heard of any of this before we just spoke of it, and I'm a little curious, and I have no plans tonight. I'm not going to the Barclays, and I'm probably not going to spend $100 on a flight.
So our civilized self says, you know what, this is too far. He's talking about murdering a man. But at a visceral level, like, there's nothing more in America that we love more than sanctioned violence. They stop hockey games for fucking fights. Like, we are, as a society, are by and large watching people hit each other as long as everyone involved is okay with the, is, knows what's going on, unless you're, as the kids say, shooting the fair one. So I think that, yeah, you're right. It's not going to attract a whole lot of new audience, but I care more about this than I do anything else that's happening this weekend, because I think these basketball series might actually be just kind of over.
Yeah, look, agree with that last point. You know, I personally am offended that you haven't brought up the PGA on the agenda for the weekend.
Didn't crack it. Tiger's out.
Cover
it. Tiger's out, so I don't cover it. I don't make the rule. I just follow.
Fair enough. But back to the boxing point. Look, yeah, is it at least, you know, getting me a little bit more intrigued than your garden variety, you know, big deal pay-per-view fight? Yes. Am I going to buy it? No.
Yeah, I say I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to go have a beer and watch the Blazers fight Gravity tonight. So it's, I mean, whatever. It is what it is. So Jake, you are a father and you're a Caucasian male in America. So you, of course, love baseball. I asked
Love
you
it.
This.
If you want to keep going down, we can go into the Bruce Springsteen thing. I'm happy to share my thoughts on the new National album that was released yesterday. Only got, you know, one good listen in, but again, as a white male father, I'm, you know, all over it. But yeah, let's dig into baseball.
By saying that, you just booked yourself on Simmons' podcast. Weird. So baseball, it's happening. There are a million games left. What is kind of the, because I know how I feel about Tim Anderson and whatever thing that Tim Anderson's doing with Chicago White Sox and being loud and being funny and calling white people bitch-ass niggas and somehow getting suspended for it. What is your take on Tim Anderson?
So, look, I will put myself, despite what you cited about my demographics, I will put myself in the love pimping home runs, hate the unwritten rules, hate the, you know, you know, the garden variety, you know, white Trump supporting baseball player type attitudes. So I am very much in that camp as a baseball fan. Like, broke my heart to see Puig get traded away from my Dodgers. I love that stuff. So I love Tim Anderson. I also, like, you know, yeah, baseball needs more like black superstars, and particularly black superstars who actually act like black superstars in other sports and have charisma and, you know, prove it on the field. So all in, couldn't be more all in. The only part I don't like about it is what it brings out of the rest of the culture, which, you know, is pretty ugly.
I asked you that in kind of a leading question because, I mean, I've known you for years. I kind of figured where you'd fall on this, but I wanted to prove to people that people like Jake exist. He's not an anomaly. Like, Jake in the NBA, like, you add that energy to baseball, to something he already loves, he's going to love it more. Like, this is ridiculous that people are making it a deal.
Yeah, look, also, good way to not get invited back by taking the other side of the take on that one. So, no, my eyes. No, it's a genuine answer. He's awesome. Love it. Got to see more of it.
I don't know if you saw, he's giving away $500 to anti-violence charity League of Leaders for per stolen base this season. He's currently leading the league.
Yeah, no, and then you contrast that with, you know, another black baseball player across the same city who, you know, is talking about his personal redemption journey from beating up his pregnant girlfriend, and everybody's buying it, right? I mean, this is couldn't be two more contrasting guys.
It's so wild because it's one of those things where all you have to do to show you change is say that I've changed, and people, by and large, are willing to roll with it if you're A, good at your sport, or B, they like you.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is he's just, like, okay. He just happens to be on the Cubs. So
that's true.
Anyway, Tim Anderson all for it. Addison Russell, get the fuck out.
So you and I are obviously it's so funny when I talk to my college friend now, I try to say, like, oh, we went to school together, but that doesn't feel adequate. So I've started saying things like, we grew up together, because I would say going to New York City for your formative years of 18 through 22 and surviving what we did and graduating in the time frame that we did is surviving. And it's kind of growing up. And so I always say we grew up together. And so Robert Kraft's, I don't want to say specter over the Columbia football team. He's a big donor and his name's on a lot of stuff. And when all this stuff broke with him and the strip mall and the massages and all that, I don't want to hear about any of it. I'm sorry. Call me or press, whatever you want to call me. I just didn't want to hear about it. And I know that people were saying, oh, I want to see him prosecuted fully. Well, one, billionaire wasn't going to jail for this anyway. And two,
It's a misdemeanor, guys. It's a misdemeanor, right?
it's a
Like at the end of the
misdemeanor,
day,
but
the charge is a misdemeanor.
also them throwing out the video evidence is the best thing that could have happened, because if they admit it, eventually it leaks and eventually it hits somewhere where it's going to hit your and eyes, if not eyeballs, but like a click away, and we have to make a decision. And my decision is would have been no, but I don't want people to have to make that decision.
Yeah, and look, let's all be honest. You're probably watching. Let's know ourselves first. You're probably watching, even though you know you don't want to. You can't look away. And look, the whole thing is hilarious. But the thing that I keep coming back to this whole thing is not the you're Robert Kraft, you're a billionaire. Why are you going to get, $20 rub and tugs? It is the poor bastards who like went once, got caught up on the list, and would have never had anyone know except for that, the screenshot somebody took of the list of names, right? And yeah, there's some like, just chugging along, Central Florida real estate broker who was caught up in this thing alongside, big private equity guys and Robert Kraft, and that's the guy I feel for. Look, don't go get a rub a tongue, but the punishment for him is outweighing the crime.
You know what? I'm really glad you're here, because I never thought of the collateral damage of that list. It never crossed my
Yeah.
mind.
Right. I mean, that guy's probably getting away with it. Probably his wife probably doesn't find out. Like,
No idea. And maybe she's not a
man, no
sports fan and
idea.
never saw the list. Maybe he's got to roll those dice and be like, do you bring it up? Do you wait for her to bring it up? Do you hope that no one else mentions it to her? Lots of questions. God, now you've completely derailed the podcast, because all I can think about is this poor other guy on the list.
Right.
Well, Jake, you're a Raiders fan who lives in New York, so I'll even let you pick your poison here. Would you rather talk about the Jets or the Raiders first?
Look, I don't care, whatever, your show, I'm just here for the fun. But the whole Jets thing is really, I mean, it is just pure hold my beer of New York dysfunction. I mean, we thought the Giants were bad, we thought the Knicks were bad. This is the developments over the last, what was it, in 48 hours with
It's ridiculous.
firing the GM is just hilarious.
Let's start there. I think that's a great place. And I think it's fun, because I guess it's hard to think back that far, because I guess I'm old now. But when we were in college, I guess the Jets and Giants were both, they're mediocre. Now, like, there was never like, there were some embarrassments, but never like massive scale embarrassments. The last month we've had the Giants, Dave Gettleman, do whatever he's done with the front office and then decide to draft a Duke player that New York wanted, but not the Duke player New York wanted. And it's like the Jets saw all the press they were getting and getting just excoriated for it. And the Jets were like, well, we don't like being not the worst, like second best at being the worst in the city. So this Wednesday, they fired GM Mike McKagan. And you may say, wow, it's not often you hear about a GM getting fired on May 15th. And that's right. The reason you don't hear about it is because, well, we're well past free agency and we're past the draft that he presumably ran. So apparently what's been going on here is it's been an ongoing push from kind of inside the organization, where they said that McKagan was over his head. You look at kind of the results of his picks and you can't really argue with it. You talk about some of the value paying, that some say overpaid Le'Veon Bell, things of that nature. But to watch this happen with on the tails of Adam Gase's hiring, with possibly the most visually arresting press conference I've ever seen, and then you promote Adam Gase to literally be the only person in the NFL to have coach and GM duties, when we saw him, how do I say this, assist in the choosing and mismanagement of talent when he was in the Dolphins. Did I cover it all? Did I grab all of it?
Understatement on the last point, but yes. And look, anytime, not to borrow like a Simmons, rubric, but anytime you have the chance to hand the full keys to football operations to a guy like Adam Gase, I mean, you have to do it, right? I mean, just to think about like the guys who've done that role, right? Wearing the GM and coach hats and failed, like the Super Bowl winners like Shanahan, right? Just the absolute legend who, like, you know, Holmgren in Seattle, like guys who just have not been able to pull it off, right?
Right.
And you give it to a guy whose, specialty is, 6-10 with, completely underwhelming performance out of, pretty good talent. You got to do it. I don't see any other option.
He's going to get Le'Veon Bell 10 touches a game and someone's head's going to explode. And I'm so here for it. It was a great quote, a great tweet I saw this week. All are true at once. Mac was bad, and it's good that he's gone, but he should have been fired with Bowles, which I think is a good wrinkle here, because apparently when Todd Bowles was there, he was like, we need to get rid of this guy. And so they fire Bowles, and then what, 6 months later, they follow his advice? Very funny. The Jets are a poorly run organization, and people were like, this is good, they're getting a fresh start. Like, why would you want a fresh start here? Like, what do you think, what about you, what you've seen says that them with a fresh slate is going to make any better than them with a bunch of baggage? So now you've got a freedom to make new, dumber mistakes?
You don't clean house, like, one room, every 6 months. Like, you clean house, fresh slate. Like, the incremental approach is part of the thing that really gets me. But look, you made the point. They were looking around. They felt a little, lack of attention for mismanagement. And again, hold my beer. Let me show you how dysfunction is really done.
So, how's it playing in New York? Like, you're on the ground. You're around these people. I say these people because these people. You're around these people a lot. What are Jets fans, how are Jets fans taking this? Because I've been cracking on Giants fans since the draft, and it's been just a world of fun for me. I don't even like to make fun of my Jets fan friends. It's just like, hey, man, it gets better, or like, you don't have to do this to yourself. Like, that's what I say to them at this point.
Yeah, no, look, your question presupposes that I have friends who are Jets fans, which is probably not all that true. Look, you put them in the same category as any, Browns aren't a good example right now, but any real Browns fan knows how this will end. Any fatalist franchise where, every time you think it can't get any worse, it just does. And I think we will talk about another franchise later that seems to be veering in that direction, if not fully there already. But I think
we're talking about more general, right now. Kinda, speaking of great,
I think it's just a general throw up your hands.
How about them Raiders? Jake. Okay, so I hope none of my friends actually listen to my podcast, but it's been a running gag on this show since they hired Gruden to like just do Gruden Watch and just report on what's going on with the Raiders. I'd like to cede the Gruden Watch floor to you because what are you doing? Do you guys have a place to play next year?
So yes, we do. I think, wait, do we? We're back at the Coliseum, though.
I
thought they struck a deal with the Coliseum.
Done. Maybe they finished the deal. Okay.
Whatever. Look, what I think would actually be a better feature is like, let's do like two truths and a lie every week of like, here's something Gruden instituted and see which one's fake. Because if you were like, oh, well, Gruden, actually got rid of like, watching digital film and they're going to actually, watch old school, 8mm film. I'd be like, well, that, I mean, could be, I could see that. Gruden is not going to use sideline radios. He's only going to do hand signals. Well, that's not out of the question. Gruden refuses to draft, African-Americans. Can't rule it out. Could be a possibility. The Gruden grinder stuff is just, The stunning lack and who could have seen this coming when the guy was out of the league for 10 years? The stunning lack of currency where the league is today.
The last time you won a playoff game, you and I were seniors in high school.
Yeah, and I know which playoff game that was, so thank you for the reminder.
that was a lot of fun for me. I want you to know that.
Well, I'm sure it was. Look, we're not going to be bad enough to be interesting, and we're certainly not going to be good. And yeah, Antonio Brown will probably not demand a trade this year, but probably the following year. And it's just we're back in the spiral. There was a nice little season and a half there where it seemed like things might be turning around, but that clearly has not come through for us. And I am, look, you know, and we talked about this, you know, for the last decade plus, it has been an absolute boon to, you know, my ability to, you know, do fantasy, to wager on other games, to wager on those games, because I just don't care. The expectations are so monumentally low that a 6-win season is just a thrill, right? But I'm getting to the point where I just don't care. Like, if they ripped off a 13-3 season with like a super exciting young team,
right?
Derek Carr is going to break, what was it? Actually, it was 12-4. Derek Carr is going to break his leg on Christmas Day. Like, there's just something's always going to happen. So I am, you know, I've been phasing out for a while. I'm never going to be fully out, but, oh man, just, look, and we're going to talk about, you know, familial mismanagement of sports franchise later, but Mark Davis is pretty high up there on the list.
That's true. This was less fun for me than I thought it would be, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, kick a man while he's down, right? You know, what did you expect?
Well, let's kick a man who's up. Clemson's Dabo Swinney reminds me why I always say fuck this guy every time I see his face. It's not because he broke college football by overpaying assistants, and it's not because his name is Dabo. He's a grown ass. Like, he's an adult. Call me Dabo, I'll punch you in the mouth. The reason I don't like him is because he says shit like this. This week, he said they may want to professionalize college athletics. Well, maybe I'll go to the pros. I'm going to coach pro football. I might as well do that. I want to remind you that this year he signed a $93 million extension that has increased buyout kickers if he takes the Bama job. Like, any amount of money is going to keep Bama from getting the coach they want. This isn't even a topic. I just want to announce once again, it's May. There's a reason why I stopped doing just podcasts about college football. And there's a reason why I watch less and less college football every year. And it's people like fucking Dabo Swinney. There's no topic. There's no discussion point. Just fuck the NCAA. And it makes me like physically, viscerally angry. Oh, and if they bring back NCAA, the football game, I want new checks. I'll need a check every year. Can I do that? They paid me once. Did I sign with my rights?
What did you get? Like 14 cents?
I got like $1,600.
Really?
It's the cover image of the first episode of this podcast, actually. I blacked out my name and the routing stuff, but yeah, I want that NCAA money. And yeah, I think a couple of my friends from Tech got $2,000. I got more than Paul, and he was very mad about it. Like, it was a text message, like, cuss out.
But just to be clear, you didn't get $93 million.
I can't say. I'll have to go back to the accounting, but I feel comfortable. I would notice that.
Look, the only thing I'll say about the Dabo thing, and then we can move on, because I think we both feel the same way about the NCAA being a complete cartel and the need to just completely abolish it. I do respect the balls to sign that contract and then complain about the players wanting to get paid. Like, the sheer chutzpah to do that is admirable. And, you know, of course it's a college football coach who has that level of ego and lack of self-awareness to do it. But really, really impressive on that front. So, you know, very, very tiny clap for him. But that's the only thing we'll be clapping for.
That's a very good point. Tyreek Evans, this is a story that I wasn't ready to cover. I put it on my list afterwards. He's been dismissed and disqualified by the NBA for 2 years for violating the drug policy. And this isn't where I get on my
show. I thought that. Go ahead.
I would just say, this isn't where I get on my soapbox and like, you shouldn't drug test for weed, because you shouldn't drug test for weed. But he has not failed a previous test. And the only way that this can be disqualified for a third test of PED or first test of Benzos, synthetic carthenones, cocaine, GHB, ketamine, LSD, methamphetamine, opiates, and PCP. Of note, he has not previously served a suspension for doping. I hope that Tyreek Evans gets the help he needs. And, like, I guess, did we see someone similar to this with Birdman?
Yeah, no, it's the exact same thing, right? Well, but wait, so I missed some of the recap, and I saw the headline today, but I didn't read any of the details. So you're saying that he didn't have prior tests or prior positive tests, so it must have been some of the hard stuff.
I mean, that's by if you cover this and you don't mention that, it's weird because they have the old we have on record he's never been suspended, and so by looking at the NBA bylaws, the only way he can be suspended or dismissed, excuse me, in this way is by failing to test for one of those things. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, look, I mean, I think the Birdman situation, I think, was a little different because Birdman was just a walking positive GHB test. they didn't actually have to test him. It was a visual confirmation. But look, yeah, as you said, get the help he needs. You know, this is clearly something a little bit more serious than weed. And look, the NBA has always taken that stuff really seriously, and I think they always said that they thought the kind of full suspension was the stuff that saved Michael Ray Richardson's life. And mm-hmm. Remember, like, coke basically crippled the league in the 70s, and that was what Magic and Larry had to, Magic and Bird had
they're
to
playing
to bring
exactly
everything
they're
back
playing
from,
on
right?
tape delay playing on tape delay yeah
right Yeah, so I get why the league takes it seriously, and I think like with any other league, they need to balance the weed stuff appropriately, especially as it just becomes more and more legal and socially accepted and all that. But at the end of the day, any of these things is just a sad story. So we get the help that he needs.
All right, so let's talk about the league that you and I have always loved, that you and I used to spend too much time playing NBA. It had to be like a 2K. I guess it was 2K6 at this point. Basketball game.
Wow.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it until right this. I was like, oh, wow, that is a long time ago. We are old people now. The NBA. Draft lottery was a couple of days ago. I did a podcast right before it, a solo show. And I kind of full shot my shot. I was like, you know what, baby Zion coming 90 minutes away from Spartanburg to Atlanta, Georgia, wouldn't be a bad thing. I know you saw him pat the Hawks dais when he walked past it. I felt, I wasn't loud about it, but I had hope. But not like the city you live in, man. Watching New York not get Zion is, and I say that now because obviously trades haven't happened, offseason hasn't started. It's just the immediacy of it all. Like, I've got friends who work at Bleacher Report who. Oh, I texted. I was like, "You got 24 hours, and I won't make any jokes 24 hours." But then I'm getting these jokes off, and they built up defense by there.
So two things: one, you can't see obviously because we're only doing this as an audio situation. But I'm doing the Italian chef's kiss to express just how much I loved. I didn't love the outcome of where he ended up, but I do love the outcome of the Knicks not getting him, and I say that. Being a big NBA fan and loving going to Madison Square Garden, and it would have obviously been great to see, that room get invigorated. I had a mini season ticket package during both Linsanity and when they traded for Melo, and the team was actually pretty solid. And look, when there's even a glimmer of hope for the Knicks, that place is rocking, and it would have been fun to see in that respect, but. Man, so much more fun to just see the continued agony of my, my fellow Manhattanites here.
So let's talk first about Zion. And you mentioned where he presumably will end up, barring any trade or movement. New Orleans. This is interesting because very famously, Anthony Davis has been trying to leave there since midseason, head west. They haven't let him go. Let's say that everyone stays. And I know. The GM was talking about how he was kind of invigorated by this pick and how in the hours after the lottery, he said that, this could be our Paul George in Oklahoma City, where, Anthony Davis's biggest gripes with the franchise were, one, lack of institutional support because it was basically the Benson's redheaded stepchild of a franchise. They basically said, oh, we're just going to use a lot of the Saints staff. They use the Saints training staff. They have the Saints GM kind of doing things. That's why people ended up injured so often. It's a poorly run organization, but since then they've brought in a real GM, they brought in a real training staff, they turned it into a real basketball organization. And I think it's interesting that David Griffin could say that, you know, give us 20 games. You think it's feasible, or you think that wearing that shirt on the sideline and them bitching him, like, I think that it's soured on both ends. I think that, you know, it's bad enough where I think you should just move him. But if David Griffin wants to try to say, let me give me 20 games, give me 30 games to try to earn and show you what's changed here, is that a viable proposition? Because every day that he's there, they're getting less and less for him on the trade.
Yeah, look, I think that's mostly true, although I dispute the less and less on the trade. Because, look, I think at the end of the day, the Lakers, Celtics, and Knicks are desperate. So whatever kind of, you know, godfather offers they're going to make are always going to be there, particularly with the Lakers in such disarray that, yeah, there is no one's coming this summer. Like, we all know that. So, you know, that offer will, I think, always be on the table. And look, the trade options are limited anyway, because if you're Utah, if you're Portland, whoever, like, you know what the outcome is on re-signing him next summer, so you're not putting a great offer out there. Look, I think David Griffin is a very good NBA GM. He is also clearly a wizard or a warlock, because every time his team has, what was it, four out of the last, it's not, I think it is actually the last four times that his team has been in the lottery, they got the number one pick. Maybe yeah. Four out of five.
And they missed real bad with one of those, man. Goodness gracious.
Real bad. But also a terrible draft too.
So look,
I think there's a real team there. I think the question, look, you basically, you give it the 20 games. I think you kind of have to do that, see what you have. And, look, I think the question is it better to build a, look, if you had a core of, Zion, the number four pick, and some of the Lakers' young guns. And again, you know, pick which ones you want there, but they're obviously, none of them are going to be your number one guy. Is it better to build that kind of baby team? You have a bunch of guys kind of under 23 and a, you know, big kind of runway in front of you. Or is it better to, you know, try and put a, you know, makeshift big three together in the Big Easy and see if it can work? A lot of it, I think, is going to depend on what happens with, you know, where Durant goes, you know, what happens with the Warriors this summer. You know, is there another kind of super team or quasi super team on the come? Because if Durant stays, which I don't think anyone thinks is going to happen, why is anyone taking a title shot? Now, if he leaves and the league gets a little bit more fragmented, then maybe there's a, you know, little window of opportunity. But I think, look, you know, we also got to think back to, as we're seeing right now, Warriors without Durant, just fine. Yeah, not world beating, you know, indestructible, but still pretty close to it. So
still pretty damn good, yeah.
I think they gotta run it out there and see what happens. They I think the only thing that would be appealing was having two of the top five picks in this draft, which I actually think, and maybe this is just, you know, the Lakers homer in me, I think it's actually a fairly deep draft at the top. I don't know. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely a tough, I would not want to be in David Griffin's shoes, because, you know, there's a lot of momentum around the franchise, but you definitely have the ability to kind of build something from the ground up here, as opposed to, you know, trying to convince AD and you know, everything seems like he's pretty dead set.
That's why I think that if I'm David Griffin, I'm looking at the Lakers offer before anything else. We know the Knicks offer is going to be out there, but it's not as attractive, obviously. And the Celtics can offer more, but how do I put this? Danny Ferry's a motherfucker. And I'm sorry, Danny Ainge, sorry, my brain. Ainge is a motherfucker, and he never actually gives you everything he can.
Well, and just to be clear, Danny Ferry is a real
motherfucker.
Danny Ferry
also a motherfucker. I apologize. That's a little cross wiring there. But no, Danny Ainge's entire philosophy is to rob you in a deal.
Right.
We've seen the Lakers, for whatever this story we're going to talk about in a second, they're willing to, they're all in. They're saying, fuck it, let's do this.
And look, the Lakers lost, really, please rob us.
The Lakers are like, the keys are on the front porch. There's no alarm system. I'm a very deep sleeper, and the safe code is written inside my wallet. You'll be fine. Yeah, it's different. But and you've got the owner be like, I'll never trade to the Lakers, which means you're probably going to trade with the Lakers. It's all just, it's super weird. And I'm glad that, I'm glad that whatever happens next will be done quietly as opposed to the ugly messiness that happened during the season. And that's what I want to talk about next with you. If you could please just inform the audience, I know you, I've known you for years, of your Laker bona fides.
I mean, where do we start?
Where are you from?
I had Southern California, Los Angeles region. Maybe this would put it best. I had shirts for when I was a kid for both Sedale Threet, and then when I was a little bit older, Mike Penberthy. Mike Penberthy.
Those are very, very, very Laker cuts.
I don't know how much deeper I have to go. I mean, you know, from the last decade plus of friendship, you know, every good break we get.
Some Google, you're fine. I think you're going to be good there. What I do want to ask is, and I mean this as earnestly as possible, what the hell is going on? Because when LeBron went to the Lakers, I reached out to you. I was like, hey, man, we're in this together. I'm cheering for LeBron. You're cheering for the Lakers. We both need success here. And since then, since then, let's just recap really quickly the season. They looked really good up front in the season.
We don't need to do that. I think people know what happened, you know.
Well, okay. Just 30,000 foot view. The four spot on Christmas Day, they beat the Warriors. LeBron gets hurt, things go left because this team was not built.
Well, but that was the end of the season. That was great. It was a great outcome. Really good season. And nothing happened after that.
Well, it's so funny because. And this is what I want to talk about is that you've got this front office who's disarray we're about to cover, like semi-throwing LeBron under the bus and making it seem like some of this was his fault and allowing the reports that he was like shadow jamming all this go unchallenged. While at the same time, he's fighting to come back before doctor's orders from this groin injury. And I'm like, just from a strict institutional, not even sports, just the way you'd run a company or a business or an organization or a frat house, it just seems fucking backwards. That you know this man is going above and beyond to do for you, and yet you watch him get excoriated for your mistakes, and you do nothing to be corrective about it?
So, look, one thing I do want to harken back to a conversation we had last summer when I did call that LeBron would have a 20 plus missed games. Due to an injury. I didn't know it would be a real injury. I thought it was going to be a quotation mark injury because they would be you know, under 500 by Christmas Day. And there is a very valid theory that this whole season was a rest year for him, right? Because he knew obviously there was no chance wherever he played of taking out the Warriors. And so recharge the batteries, try and get with an organization that can put a real team together. And by the way, you know, get to live in LA at the same time. Best laid plans here. Look, so to the front office point, I will, and you know that I have a very long history as a Lakers exceptionalist, and
yes,
the last decade or so have started to swing me in the direction of, I guess, a Lakers fatalist, where I think I now kind of presume the worst whenever anything happens, good happens to us. This front office and its various permutations over the last, let's go back to 2012, let's go back to the Dwight Howard and let's go back to the, this is going to be fun team.
Love that cover.
Since then, there has been, let's put aside the draft because they've actually drafted reasonably well. Put aside the draft.
Right.
There has been one good leadership decision made.
Luke Walton
hiring quasi okay. And the one good decision, by the way, they didn't really have anything to do with, and that was getting LeBron. Everything else they botched, right? They traded the wrong point guard when they traded D'Angelo. They don't even get me started on Byron Scott. Don't get me started on, D'Antoni was a terrible hire for that team. We all know that. He's a great coach, but he's a terrible hire for that team. The Mozgov and Deng contracts, which obviously then led to the D'Angelo Russell trade. It's just been, regardless of who's in the driver's seat, it's just been bad decision after bad decision. It seemed like Pelinka and Magic had brought a little bit of focus and long-term strategy and vision, but really all it was clear cap space and we know LeBron's coming. And that was all there was, right? And let's try and, you know, lean our way into that second superstar. And you know, this is where Lakers exceptionalism, when it fails, it fails dramatically because you're only swinging for the fences, right? So Paul George decides to stay. You know, San Antonio basically says over our dead body with a Kawhi trade. Here we are, right? So it is, and I know you're going to touch on the Linda Randa stuff. It is just painful to see, you know, we talked about how Gruden hasn't kept up with where, you know, the NFL has gone. That organization just has not come anywhere close to how these, how successful NBA teams are run these days. And it's a shame because they're drafting well. They obviously have every market and brand advantage you could ever want. But, you know, the days of these things being run as family businesses where you, you know, want to keep guys in the same jersey forever and you give sweetheart deals to take care of them. But, you know exactly what I'm talking about and referencing. That's just over. That's not the way these things run anymore. And it's a shame because, man, Dr. Buss was a pretty amazing American individual. But, you know, you look at who owns these teams today, it's super sophisticated private equity and hedge fund guys. It's, you know, guys who've made a real fortune being smarter and more aggressive than everybody else in the room. Not guys who, you know, booze and schmooze their way through the LA real estate market. It's a different weight class, and you see that with, you know, how the Clippers are blowing them out of the water for the best run team in their own city. And yeah, that's it just comes back to how these aren't family businesses anymore. So they're just not meant to be. And you look at the families that own these things and are across the spectrum of sports, which families are doing a good job, you know, owning massive sports franchises. I can't believe I'm saying this, but you probably rank like the Steinbrenners the best. Other than that, it's just not the way
things go. And the Steinbrenner thing was ugly for a while.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was really ugly for a while. And it's only because Brian Cashman had so much power that, that organization, what it is. Yeah, it's depressing to see because you just think about the wasted potential and, you know, the fact that Jerry West is across the hall just makes it even worse.
It's so wild to me because even look at the most recent coaching search, like they offer a guy with a title 3-6 and they end up getting Fogle for 3-5, which that's one of the reasons I say ship out the young kids, because if I get a coach young guys and build a young core, I'm taking Alvin Gentry over Frank Vogel 10 times out of 10.
Definitely. But Gentry wasn't on the market. We don't interview him, did he?
No, I'm saying if you're gonna make if you're the Pelicans front office and you're deciding, do I wanna get young guys and coach them up from the ground up, Gentry's the guy to do it. They've got a coaching place to do what they want to do if that's what they move.
For sure.
And I think that, you know, we can talk about how the Vogel thing got there, but bottom line is they're trying to be cheap. And I say, oh, why do you mean by cheap? The Cavs gave old buddy from Michigan, whose name doesn't matter because he's not going to be there in 3 years. They gave him 5 years. But the idea is he'll coach two or three, and we'll pay him, we'll buy out the last two. The Lakers never operate from a play. Like, Tyronn Lue should have at least been offered five. Because you just say, oh, the last two are sunk costs. But by the Lakers intending to be cheap, and like you say, to keep that kind of family business mentality, that's not how it works anymore on any level. And you did a great job touching on it. Second generation ownership and management and running these teams. Is it time for the Busses to get out of the basketball business?
Look, I think it's long past that. And it is amazing to me because I get all the family pride issues and everything like that. But that team goes on the market. It's $3 billion like that. No question about it. If not more. Especially with, you know, people seeing what they could actually, you know, what a real management and a real front office could build there. But I get the pride thing, and I get, you know, Dr. Buss never would have sold, and, you know, these people are operating in just a completely different universe of mentality than you or I. So it's depressing. It's not going to happen anytime soon. I would be surprised. Yeah, you know, if it ever does, quite frankly, until it gets to, you know, the next kind of super fragmented generation of kids and nieces and nephews and whatever. But I think, unfortunately, the Busses are here to stay. you know, absent some sort of, you know, league intervention, which, you know, the buses have some bad behavior, but not that bad.
I would say this. It's interesting how many Lakers fans I've talked to who kind of saw this coming and kind of knew this was – because like you said, going back to probably 2012, every decision, major decision has been a bad one. But for so many of us, and I think including LeBron James, the Lakers' mystique still held. And now is the first time the world seemed to fracture.
Yeah, well, and look, I will say this. I was talking last weekend to Ben Cohen, who's a friend. I've gotten to know him through one of my wife's friends. He's one of the journal's NBA reporters, and he super sharp guy and obviously incredibly well connected. I've had him have to step away from a conversation to talk to Steph Curry on the phone and stuff like that. So he knows what he's talking about. And he made the point. He's like, especially if the Warriors break up or break up in some degree, like we talked about earlier, the Lakers really aren't that far off. And you know, again, season ends on Christmas Day. Last year was a great success. There was that run, you know, kind of coming out of us getting eliminated from the playoffs when they were kind of playing a little bit more freewheeling ball and Ingram and LeBron were really clicking. They're not that far off. And as in disarray as things seem, a relatively rested LeBron, you know, all those young guys, hopefully a healthy Lonzo, I think there's still some glimmers there, and it'll be interesting to see what happens this summer. I would run, not walk away from Jimmy Butler. I'm not sure how I feel about Kemba Walker. You know, Durant's not coming. Kawhi's not coming. Maybe Kyrie. But I think that's unlikely too. And so, you know, all that being said, LeBron James is still on the team. So it's not off the court. It's a total disaster and a total train wreck. I actually don't think on the court it's going to be that ugly. But
that's
a shame because.
Go ahead.
Just to say with a better and more thoughtful plan and a kind of more strategic approach to the Anthony Davis trade rather than here, like pick whatever you want and we'll also leak it to the media so that all these guys know that we're basically offering anybody but LeBron up. You know, we would have been fine. You know, it's just that there isn't that level of management. And by the way, I think that the underrated here, aspect here in terms of the blame game is everybody in the NBA, from everything I've heard, seems to just hate Rob Pelinka. Now, maybe it's because he is just an incredibly handsome and well-dressed dude, and I get the jealousy aspect. But he does not seem to be a popular guy, and that's not a great spot for your GM to be in.
Not a great place for your GM to be. That's a good point. I'm with you on the court stuff too. I think that this team, in its best iterations, actually looks pretty good together. My biggest worry, and never been worried before this year, before the actual, like you said, legitimate injury of LeBron, in the middle of the season next year, if he plays a pace, he'll have crossed third most basketball minutes played by anyone in the NBA ever.
Yeah. No, look, the clock is ticking there, and it always has been. And as superhuman as he is, you know, Kobe also had a pretty – you know, pretty superhuman minutes load and was, you know, fighting through it until he wasn't, right?
Exactly.
Let's talk about
NBA Finals. Oh, wait, sorry. That's next week's show, Warriors Bucks. This week, I got to pretend that it's not happening yet.
Right.
Warriors Blazers will start out west. Seth Curry had the best game of his life. They doubled the Warriors up on threes in game two. They came out like gangbusters, and they still lost by three. Is there any shot that the Blazers steal one in Portland? I'm going to go ahead and say maybe, because it doesn't look like Kevin's coming back at least games three or four. Didn't even fly with the team, which makes you wonder just how serious this calf injury actually is. But secondly, you know, I like this Portland team. I'd like to see Dame do something right once. And Steph can't do this every game, can he? He can't just obliterate you for a quarter every game. I mean, we've seen him do it in the past, but this is the playoffs. This is where Steph's biggest two liabilities come into forefront. He has a tendency to get injured, and he doesn't play very good defense. We saw that with Seth. That's very confusing. Curry family, don't do that again. Seth, he stole the ball from him four times. Like, he went at him off the dribble. Like, it's the best game Seth ever played, probably because every time he lines up with his brother, it's like, oh, I've been roasting this guy since we were kids. Like, This is the best set Steph's ever played defense, and he's still not very good. So I think you might be getting a little confidence boost there from the lesser Curry. But, Jake, tell me there's a possibility that we're going at least to game five, that we're going to get one more trip to Oakland for Dame Lillard.
Yeah, they'll steal one. You know, if the Warriors have shown anything over the years, it's a lackadaisical attitude when they go up 2-0, let alone 3-0. And look, I don't think there's any shame in them dropping one at home to super. That building is great, and I don't think Dame is going to let. He's played all right, but I don't think he's going to. He'll have a signature game, and so they'll steal one, and that's great. But let's just fast forward because I think we all know what's going to happen here. And it's been a nice and cute little sub story with the Curry brothers. But let's just all be honest about where this ends.
I'm trying to make it interesting. One that's definitely not going to go five. Bucks Raptors. Holy shit! I was wrong about the. I picked the Warriors in six because I was like, oh, the Trailblazers will fight. No, I was wrong. I was very wrong. I was just as right about this series. Holy shit! The Raptors are terrible. Kawhi's gone. Oh my god! Like, it's one thing. Like, game one was weird because the only person to score in the fourth quarter was Kyle Lowry, and he had his first ever good game one in a playoff series ever. Game two was an evisceration. It was the announcement of Giannis as the best player on the planet. It was a reminder that while everyone else is getting injured and worn down, this Bucks team is getting players back as they go deeper. And it's also, here's something I looked up. Giannis hasn't played over 40 minutes in a game since December, Jake.
That's absurd. I didn't realize that. That is just comical.
Bud has been resting him for this stretch run.
And look, I'll say this about the Raptors. Like, at the end of the day, you can get Kawhi on there, you can get Marc Gasol on there. Like, they are still the Toronto Raptors. They still should bet the playoffs at some point. But man, like, I'm just amazed because I haven't watched a ton of their regular season games. Like, their seventh and eighth dudes are like real dudes. Like, it's a really deep roster, and I still think Masai is the best GM in the league. But
I've been saying it all year.
This series has given me a little bit of 07 Cavs Pistons vibes of Giannis has fully officially arrived and he will not win in the finals, but this is the moment, right?
I'm excited for the final. I disagree with that finals take, actually.
So, are we moving on to the finals?
Well, let's do on the finals, but I just want to, because I say this every time I talk about the Bucks. Mike Budenholzer won the East with the fucking Hawks and Gallus four All-Stars. Then you gave him a legitimate transcendent player. Watch what he builds. It's going to be terrifying. Because let's talk about this finals that we presumably are going to get. Warriors-Bucks. Look, there's enough length on that Bucks team to really, really hound Steph. There's nowhere to hide Steph on defense on that team. And who checks Giannis? Because Kevin's not going to want to do it for 48. And Draymond, I don't think Draymond can.
Well, Draymond has proven that if he can't check someone, he has other ways of doing it. so let's never count that out. Yeah, Kawhi's quad from 2 years ago, we'll tell you that. Look, I get it, and I was reading a bunch of stuff yesterday that people were saying, making the same points you are, which is between the length and how deep the offense is and the shooting and all that. That's a real
more deep in the league, baby.
I just feel like we've seen this movie before. They got a chance, they line up well, and look, the only team I saw this the other day, and I thought it was absolutely incredible. The only team that's taken more than two games from the Warriors across the last three postseasons is obviously the Rockets. And then the Clippers winning two games this past first round. Mm-hmm. Like, it is still, even if Durant misses game one, which I think like game one's like still 10 days out or something like that. God bless the NBA playoff schedule. Yeah, no, look, I know, but there's a lot of time left, and look, even without him, they close out that Rockets team, right? They close out their best competition in the West.
That's a testament to the fucking Rockets. I yelled about them last week.
Fair enough, fair enough. But look, I hope the Bucks line up well. I hope that this is the repeat of the 2014 2014 Heat, like, you know, the dynasty goes out in a kind of ugly way. But I just don't see it, especially if they get Durant back. But look, it is about the best matchup you could possibly draw up, and the Bucks appear to be clicking right at the right time.
I really hope everything you're saying makes 1,000% basketball sense. I respect you enough, and I've had those thoughts too. Only thing I'm hanging my hat on, we're not going to have 100% KD, no matter what happens. He's not going to be 100%.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
Two, like, I think this is the best defensive team in the league, like, by no small measure, including transition defense. And that's where always the Warriors, that avalanche happens in the third quarter, where all of a sudden you're turning the ball over and they can't miss a shot. So I think if you take away that avalanche from them, they've shown the propensity to put themselves in a pretty fucking big holes. And this is a team that you can't get in a hole against the Bucks, because they will just suffocate you.
No, I mean, it is still incredible to me. I mean, so this is the fifth straight finals, right? And five straight finals runs, and they just, the number of dumb passes that they continue to make.
The stupid foul stuff is picking up in the Rocket series. I was like, these are the dumbest early fouls I've ever seen in my entire life.
It is like, you know, it's always basketball perfection and just like a thing of beauty, particularly without Durant. Like it has been a little bit of a nice reminder of what they were and how joyous that basketball was. But always forget about the dumb passes until you actually see them, and you're like, what are you doing? How is it possible that you could win? You're gonna win four out of five titles, three in a row, best record of all time, thrown out of the passes that sometimes tries.
Yeah. Well, Jake, man, it was really a pleasure talking to you, man. The parade didn't happen, or at least didn't interfere with the podcast at all. I'm happy about that.
We dodged it. This is great.
We did dodge it. Do you have anything you want to say to Andrew Ward, who's going to be mad he was on the podcast?
I am not really in a position coming out of that Dodgers-Red Sox World Series last year to say anything to
you
Andrew
know what?
Ward.
Honestly, I think he may never be on because of all the rampant success Boston's having. Like, that may be a stance I take.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. The one thing I do want to say, and I think maybe we can book a show in the future where I'll actually just kind of run through all the things you've said that I think are absurd, and we can just have a, like, I eviscerate you for dumb statements, because that would be a lot of fun, and you can do it right back to me. So last week, you know, because I was listening to last week's just to make sure, you know, I kind of was I hadn't listened in a while, so I want to make sure I had the format down and was feeling good. And you made a comment about the what's the Ohio State assistant, the guy who beat his wife a bunch of times, and Devin Meyer ignored it, Zach Smith or whatever. Probably not even worth saying his name. But you reference him as Urban Meyer's biggest mistake. And I just, what about the murderer that he coached? Look, what about that guy?
We're really going to say, okay. I will debate that, because that's a mistake he made once, and he did it with a very measured, calculated, almost shark-like analysis of risk of, can I get a title out of this guy before he kills someone else? Zach Smith kept dragging. He took him to two more jobs.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think it's more, yeah, if Urban Meyer had gone to the league and then drafted Aaron Hernandez, it would have faces. But anyway, I just wanted to get that off my chest because I heard it last night, and I was like kind of tired and had a couple drinks and was kind of dozing off, but that kind of shot me right up in my chair. So I was like, wait a second, here was a guy who killed a couple people. What about him?
I'm always here to make the audience think. That was the show. Thanks everyone for listening. There will be no more outros. I'll find out something else to do to have fun with this. But talk to you guys next week. Make sure you listen to everything on the MTR Network. There's going to be a lot of stuff on this feed coming up next week, including the return of the MTR Monthly Mortgage Podcast. And we'll also be having the final of this series of Between Two Palms episodes, as we're going to record our in-game thoughts with myself and my much better half, S. Palm. And y'all are going to get real sick and fucking tired of calling me Susan's husband on social media. I'm about sick and tired of it. See you guys next week.
I'm not.